and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudali Wickham-Ashby. And I'm extremely pleased today to have in the studio with me, Mr. Dennis DePisa, the General Secretary of the Congress of Trade Unions and Staff Associations of Barbados. Welcome to Visions, Dennis.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
It's indeed a pleasure to have you as well. So Dennis, today I want us to really talk about trade unions and the life and times of the trade unions, as well as something that you have been doing very vigorously over the last few years, and that is supporting employees with disabilities. So can I start, Dennis, with you explaining what is a trade union?
Well, that is the easiest of questions, but that's a good question. Well, as we all know, trade unions is a body that represents workers, and we are here for the purpose of ensuring that workers' rights, the conditions of service, that we can be able to bargain for the working conditions and the wages of workers. We're here to protect the interests of workers. And at the same time, we're here to work with the employer, because a trade union does not only look after the welfare of its members, but it has to also engage with the employer. So we're here to try to ensure that a relationship develops between the two that allows for an environment that is not hostile, but one that's accommodating, one in which both parties understand that they're working for a common goal. And the idea is that they would try at both ends to ensure that they meet their end of the bargain, which is that a gentleman's agreement, as they want to put it, that we agree to certain practices, behaviors, and standards that are set. All those make for a good working environment. So the union helps its workers, or those employees, or the society as a workforce, to better understand and appreciate what are the expectations of the workplace. And therefore, that brings to the point that we are very much into the education of workers and of people generally, because all persons are potential workers. So once we educate and create awareness, that helps us to create that type of understanding that will bring both a harmonious relationship that exists, but also a productive workforce. Because if you are comfortable in your work arrangements, if you are having a life that you are able to exist on the wages and salaries that you are given and the benefits that are had, then I believe that you are in a better frame of mind to be more productive and be more committed to the work to which you are assigned to compete on a daily basis. We are about ensuring that the workers more or less grow and develop in their workplace, but that they're all well acquainted with what are the expectations, because as we would say, on both sides of the fence, both the employers and the workers, where their rights, they also have some responsibilities. So we want everybody to understand, yes, we are going to protect your interests, look after your rights, your human rights, your work rights, but at the end of the day, we want to understand you have to exercise some level of responsibility. Of course, maturity will be part of that as we look at the whole in its holistic manner, rather than to look at it in a piecemeal way. So that gives us a sense of what it does.
So you just explained very beautifully the trade union, what it is and its role. So now tell us about CTUSAB, the Congress of Trade Unions and Staff Associations of Barbados, because the role will still be a bit different.
Well, at the end of the day, CTUSAB is still very much in the vanguard of representing workers on the collective basis. And I use the word collective here because the Congress of Trade Union is an umbrella body of trade unions and staff associations. So as we look at it and break it down to understand the various roles, the individual unions represent their members. Obviously, when we have issues, I would call for macro nature, things that are universal, we come together to share opinions and at least help to provide some level of knowledge and expertise that would guide us in making informed decisions. Because at the end of the day, we want to influence national policy. So what we are seeing at the trade union and Congress as an umbrella body is there to look at the thing on the macro level, towards national policy. And I dare say also to give that advice to its member units, because then when we conjoin together, we look at the particulars, we look at the circumstances, we look at the experiences that might be surrounding, so that you can be able to learn from the experience of one member organization, so that the other organizations don't make the same mistake or are in a better way able to treat the matter if it should arise. At the end of the day, the Congress is very much about education as well. And that is where we believe that we have to make a change, because if you are knowledgeable, if you understand the environments and the situations, then you're able to shape policy. That is very critical. And as we speak, we recognize that in the Barbadian context, there's a social partnership, and the Congress will be one of those three pillars of the partnership. As you know, the other two will be the government and the private sector. So therefore, when we're looking at the work environment and the consciousness of our civil society as those things that would impact on the life of citizens overall, we too are part of those discussions, so that we can help to shape national policy as far as we can influence. Because the labor movement, when you're talking at the parochial level of the individual unions and at the level of the Congress, we are there to advocate, we're there to agitate, we're there to try to influence change, and we always are speaking to how could we collectively come together and make a difference within the entire decision-making process of our country.
Okay, great. So over the years, you would have given strong representation to workers in Barbados. But within recent years, you have placed a bit more emphasis on how CETUSAB and its member unions and staff associations can give greater support to employees with disabilities. And sometimes we don't even mention it per se, but those employees with injuries and illnesses. Talk to us about the code of practice that was designed about what, 7 to 10 years ago?
I will take you back to, we have in our organization a statement of policy document. And that document speaks to the physically and mentally challenged. And in that statement of policy document, I just say what it says when we speak about the physically and mentally challenged. It says, CETUSAB believes that those who are physically or mentally challenged should be ensured fair and equitable treatment, allowing equal access to educational opportunities, employment, and all civil and human rights and other rights guaranteed by the laws of Barbados. And it goes on to say that CETUSAB believes, in particular, that those who are physically and mentally challenged should be provided with access to all opportunities in the educational system, including entry to any formal examination at any level. So what we are saying to you, that we are very much on point when it comes to speaking to equality. No discrimination should be a part of what we're doing, but we're speaking to the development of persons and the fair treatment of persons. And that is what would have informed the code of practice for the employment of persons with disabilities. I'm sure that has gone a long way in influencing the current draft legislation that is being contemplated. Because under that code, CETUSAB has made it very clear that the code of practice for persons with disability is grounded in the International Labour Convention, and it speaks to the Convention's number 111, which refers to discrimination, employment, and occupation, which the government of Barbados has also ratified. And if that is the case, then we are saying that discrimination is defined as any distinct exclusion or preferences made on the basis of race, color, sex, religion, political opinion, nation, extraction of social origin, among other characteristics, which have the effect of nullifying or impairing equality of opportunity and treatment in employment and occupation. So that alone sets the basis of why we are saying that we should make sure that those persons who have a disability or acquire a disability should not be disadvantaged in any way, but should be treated fairly and should be treated as we would treat any human being, whether that person is able, or as we say, carries a disability. So there are aspects of the framework document that we have tried to get the government in its policy to look at, and that would include the introduction of a quota system so that we are making sure that employers and employment opportunities in here are not denied persons with disability, the introduction of flexible working hours, the enforcement of penalties for unfair dismissal of workers, and provision for alternative employment of workers who suffer disability as of in the Employment Rights Act. We also are asking that there be the establishment of a recruitment policy which reflects equality of opportunity and the discriminatory policy that should be established at the workplace. The development of a communication strategy is also important. And the list goes on to include the instituting of an orientation program for workers with disability. We are asking that the promotion of an education and retraining policy so as to ensure that persons with a disability can be continuously employed. The promotion of the rights of the individual to join a trade union, which is the right under the Constitution, and that should not be denied those persons as well. And the key elements of the code are identified under three headings, and they are the recruitment, policy orientation, training, and career development and promotion. We also speak to job retention because we believe a policy should apply where it relates to persons who, as I said, acquire a disability, and assessment and rehabilitation should be part of that. And of course, we cannot have a policy or look to develop something that does not maintain or retain or address the whole issue of the confidentiality of information. So that in itself, in a nutshell, gives you a sense of why we are very much in the vanguard of ensuring that the persons with disability are not treated less favorably than the ordinary citizen who's also part of the workforce and part of our civil society.
How would you respond to the area of recruitment where in societies nowadays there's a measure of discrimination based on age, based on disability, and some other areas? How can we combat this level of discrimination?
Well, clearly, there's a need for a monitoring system to be in place, and I'm sure the department that is charged with that would be the Ministry of Labour through the Labour Department, which would have to ensure that enforcement is done because we are saying that we have legislation speaking to the issue of non-discrimination. As I said, we support that on the ILO Convention 111, and if in our practice this obtains, it means that something is wrong. And that's why the legislation that is being proposed, once it comes on stream, there's teeth then to bring those persons who are guilty of such behavior to account for their actions. It's important that we understand that a disability does not mean that that person cannot function. Disabilities come in various ways, and those of us who had any experience of a family member suffering disability does not remove their mental faculties. And those who may be physically inclined, there are other skill sets that they may have or they can acquire, which makes them functional. So it is not to say, unless there's an extreme case, which there may be some of those, that you should be putting people under the microscope so severely that you put them into the basket and say that you are not ready, or let me say, prepared in the context of what the employer requires that that person can do the job. And there will be some semblance of that, as we have to expect. But generally speaking, I'm sure that most persons, even those who, for example, may have vision impairment, with all the technology now, those persons can do just a good job or better than persons who have all of their faculties intact and who may not be as competent, capable, or even as efficient in delivering the service or the skills that are required to have the job done in the effective and efficient way. So I think that we have to remove ourselves from thinking that because a person has a disability, that that means that they have been placed in the basket to be discarded, because that mind is not thinking that is a cause with the good reason that those persons still have something to offer in a different way Because if a person loses a limb, does not mean that they can't function because the eyesight is still there and they can learn the skills that will help them to be able to deliver whatever they are maybe required to do in a particular job that has been made available to them.
I think that there needs to be greater dialogue around not only the recruitment, but the retention of persons with disabilities in the labor market. Because sometimes, as you're pointing out, individuals already in the workplace may acquire a disability, and there is a need for greater effort to either retool the individual or place them in a different area to work, or have the conversation with the individual about leaving work early and, dealing with all the necessary payments with that person leaving the system. So I think there needs to be greater conversations because sometimes the individual may want to continue to work, but the level of not making that effort to include and retrain and give the necessary support and accommodation can be a bit challenging on the individual because, we have to consider the cost involved as well. So if a person becomes mobility challenged, it means then they have to expend more money on transportation. If a person loses their hearing, it means now that they have to learn sign language or find another way of communicating with their management and colleagues. So there's a lot more dialogue that needs to take place so that the necessary accommodations can be put in place to help that individual to settle back into the workforce and continue to be productive.
As I listen to you, it is clear that there are two things that we need to reinforce. Now, as the world changes, there's room now more so than before for embracing persons with disability. If not in the mainstream workforce, as we see the traditional jobs, technology has made it possible for people now to work from home. And there can't be an excuse. As you spoke to the retrofitting of the office and so forth, there are some jobs that do not require that. And where there is a need, I mean, we've established that there should be ramps provided for persons with disabilities because we have to understand that this world is no longer a world for one set of persons. So we have to change and ensure that this happens to include all. And that's why the whole idea of inclusiveness has to be placed well and foremost on the minds of all of us, especially those who are employers. Now, take for example the code which the Congress had developed. It made provisions in it for how an employer should treat the disabled worker. And it specifically relates to the terms of the Safety and Health Act 2007, where that provide that employers are required to observe a few things, one of which should be to provide training for an employee with disability so as to better equip that individual to perform the required duties and functions. So training, and we have to retrain all of our staff. If a staff is not being retooled, retrained in this day and age, they're not going to be as productive and efficient. The competitive element will be lost because everybody is trying to maximize. So therefore, to enhance skill sets, to enhance the knowledge of how the work environment is being transformed, you have to constantly educate, retool, reskill our employees. And again, I'm saying here that we're not discriminating the persons with disabilities. These two are mindful that they can be retrained or trained to do the job. And it speaks to the right provision for an employee with a disability as the circumstances warrant. In the mainstream job or workplace, there are supervisors who supervise able-bodied persons, so there cannot or should not be a difficulty in providing a similar type of supervision for persons with disability, because the important thing is the person capable, that the person has what is required in terms of the skill sets to do the job, the knowledge, and that or expertise. As long as those things that criteria has been met, then we should provide us the support. And that's where the supervision is important. And we speak to the fact of making physical accommodation and other resources available so that the person can do their duties. We know persons might need a special chair, as I said, a ramp because of wheelchair and have access. That means that they can get into the building and do what is required as a wheelchair-bound person. But there are other persons who might have other problems. I mean, you might need to do Braille, or you might not necessarily, a person who, let's say, has a vocal issue, that person might not be able to speak as clearly, but they certainly can type and do all the other things that are allowing to communicate. And sign language is commonplace now. And I'm sure that once that person is trained up, that they too can communicate using those means. And you know, in the workplaces nowadays, everybody now is still using the medium of WhatsApp and so forth. So even if a person cannot speak and they can communicate using those mediums, then they are as good enough in terms of their communication that they can be effectively able to discharge their duties. So I'm saying that we all have to understand that there are ways that the persons with disability can be accommodated within the workplace, and there must be an effort made. I don't believe you have to use a basic policy. I think something common sense prevail. But I think in this case, perception, because a lot of the inhibitions that we see or hear about come out of perceptions that people have, and they're not living the reality. And if we begin to look in the real world and recognize the value of people and their contributions to society, then we will have a second thought about what actions that we might contemplate taking or have taken as a result of our own limited perceptions.
I quite agree. And I think that in addition to all of this, there is an area that is not very well developed. It's very underdeveloped in Barbados. And that is the area of vocational rehabilitation, where individuals who may acquire a disability, who may have temporary or permanent injuries and certain illnesses that will impact their hours of work, the potential to sit for long hours or stand for long hours, all these areas we're not discussing in an effective manner to really give greater support to the employee and to truly acknowledge the human right to work, decent work. And I think that, as I said before, we need to have more conversations on these type of areas so that as time goes by, people will become more comfortable with seeing people with disabilities in the workforce, producing, as well as being very involved in the various activities within their workplaces.
What you just said reinforces what the code of practice that the Congress had put together reflects. Because workplace arrangements are critical, and you're going to make arrangements for the able-bodied person. And this is just to reinforce the point that I've been making earlier. And there is under the Safety and Health Act and so forth, we speak to the workplace occupational safety and health standards. And we pull that along to look at the issue of decent work. Now, decent work requires that we treat people in an environment that provides them to be productive and to be able to properly remunerate them, to be able to give them a sense of workplace satisfaction and so forth. So, we have to start by saying, hey, are we providing reasonable accommodation? In other words, do they have access to the job requirements that we want? And are we putting in place the facilities to accommodate them to be able to deliver? Are we giving them flexible work arrangements? Because as you have making the point earlier, so that they can be able to be productive. Because if a person cannot work an 8-hour shift, but they certainly can work a 5-hour shift, mind you can get a lot of that 5 hours or 4 hours and make the work arrangements so flexible that they're able to re-energize themselves, if so to speak, and be able to still deliver quality work and to the employer's satisfaction. So these are things that we need to concentrate on and not discard, because if we do not look at all of the possibilities and what it is that we need to do to make the environment conducive to all workers, I say all workers, whether you're able or disabled, then we are falling short of our own vision of trying to have a productive society where we are saying that everyone matters. We can't say that and do not do what is necessary to reflect that we really are doing the right thing to ensure that persons are given the sense that they are part and parcel of society that recognizes them and their contributions.
And Dennis, as we get ready to wrap up the conversation on this at this time, I also want us to briefly look at how do we give support to the workers for them to have a greater commitment to being more responsible within their various workspaces.
That question, I would call it a double-edged sword. You know, earlier I spoke about everybody having rights and everybody having responsibilities. I bring this back to what we were speaking to earlier. Every workplace should have a clear policy how it functions, and that includes its standards, its guidelines, its practices, whatever. And if that is so, reinforce and persons buy into what the organization goals, mission, then you will have a different sense of how people would respond. But part of the problem could come when people are undervalued, underappreciated, and there is this big stick approach. Well, then embracing people, meeting them at their level, because everybody will not operate at the same level for various reasons, but you have to understand what are the issues, and to help people to work through those issues. This is where effective management comes into play. But if you are not able to give people a sense that you care for them, the attitudes that you may not wish to see, may those that want that might manifest themselves, and hence the issue or problem that you have just spoken to may arise, because indifference comes out of, again, a sense of nobody cares, and you don't get the impression that you're being treated fairly and equally. And if you're not empowered, all these are things that are pushbacks. And I would think that is where we have to do a better job in terms of how we get the parties in the workplace to understand that it's about working together. That's very important. And if they understand that the personal relationships that exist, you want to remove the politics of the workplace that is negative and has no bearing on improving the image and the morale and ethos within the circle. And we want to have a set of people who are buying in and who feel that they are part and parcel of the decision making. And that means all persons, whether you have a disability or you are able-bodied. The reason I'm saying that you are part of the institution, you are functioning, your brain is there, and you can add value because your input helps to shape the organization and helps the organization to have a culture that is one that will get the both the internal and the external customers to have a greater appreciation for that organization or enterprise.
So, my final question to you, Dennis, is what 3 points would you offer to both the employer and the potential employee with a disability to build and strengthen an inclusive work environment?
Well, from the employer's point of view, I think the employer should always be mindful of the fact that if a person has a disability or acquires a disability, do not first start by determining that person cannot do the job. You have to give the opportunity. And if you give the opportunity based on, of course, a reasonable set of criteria that you have established, and I ensure that if you see the potential, then tap into it, because you might be pleasantly surprised at the level of output that you receive and how that person can chart a different path within your organization. So that's to both parties, I would say you must be very open-minded. Because if you come in under your disillusion or your expectations are way beyond what the reality is, then there are going to be problems. But most importantly, There must be cooperation. People must understand that to build and to be able to see people grow and develop in your organization, there must be cooperation on both sides. That is built on understanding and appreciation of what is expected of you and how you can commit to making sure that you meet what is expected of you. That's from the employee side in terms of the loyalty, the commitment, the dedication, the resourcefulness, all those things that make for a good employee. Or from the employer's side, if you do not live up to your part of the bargain, if you do not give your workers a sense of what something that motivates and inspires them, if you are sitting there and you do not show the right approaches and you divide your organization, then you're clearly going to create stumbling blocks. Because you put, let's say, you want to match everybody and disabled persons, and you want to decide that you're going to be favoring one side or the other, clearly it's not going to look, and you will not have the type of same enthusiasm and vigor from one of the set of those employees. But you want to make all of them feel comfortable and inspire them to do a better job. So I think it's those three things alone can make a difference in the workplace. If the right mindsets, the right attitude, and the right dispositions are demonstrated in the work environment.
Well, Dennis, I must say thank you very much for coming and sharing a bit more about your code of practice, which I am very thankful for. And I'm believing that the various trade unions will continue to promote that code of practice and really look to build a greater and more inclusive workplace for employees with disabilities.
Thank you for having me on the program. I really hope that the few insights that I brought to the table will make a difference in the thinking of both sides, in both employers and employees, and that we will see, put another way, let's hope that better days are coming.
Better days are definitely coming. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yodeli Wickham Ashby, and my special guest today, Dennis DePizzo, General Secretary of the Congress of Trade Unions and Staff Associations of Barbados, C2SAB. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can check this and past episodes by going to vob929.com website. So until next week, remember, love yourself, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Ciao.